It's Boss Barrel Radio, episode 102, and I am Griffin Hoffman. With me this week is Griffin Hoffman and Griffin Hoffman. Just me, and let me tell you, this is terrifying. It's definitely one thing to do the videos and talk while you're doing those, but to be doing a podcast here by myself just is freaky, man. So freaky. Well, so I'm sure, starting on a high note here, with confidence brimming, this episode is going to be head and shoulders the best of the year and the last of the year. What's been going on? Well, thanks for asking. Not a ton. Think I'm getting sick, as is everybody this time of year, and I'm sure everybody cares about that. So, chew on that for a bit. Other than that, I mean, it's been pretty uneventful, honestly. Work has been busy, so I haven't had a chance to do a ton of writing. And there's, besides just old reviews for the games that came out earlier this year, there's not a ton to write about. I do have some games I've been playing, if that matters. Let me grab the old little box here. So Far Cry 3 came out since last episode came up, and I've been playing that on the Xbox. This game, Far Cry 3, has been receiving like universal praise as being potentially the best game of the year and a magnificent shooter and, you know, quite possibly the best experience to be had in 2012. I don't know if I agree with that one. I mean, you know, the game is solid. The mechanics are fun. It's as open worldy and freedom of choicey as any Far Cry game has been before, except now it just seems to have a gajillion more pounds of polish applied to it. So, all the jank, well, most of the jank is gone. You know, you can actually, previously, if you'd go and you'd creep up on a village ready to assassinate some dudes silently, some weird shit would happen where somebody would glitch out, fall through the world, your car would explode, and everything would just go sideways. And now it seems like everything still does go sideways when you try to approach a village, but it's because a pack of wild aardvarks charged you, and simultaneously you got started catching a that's too dangerous. Don't want to say the M word. You got a jungle sickness, like a elevated temperature in the tropics, whatever you call that, and you start going crazy, and you start sneezing wildly, and you have these aardvark snipping at your heels, and that arouses suspicions of the guards in the nearby thingy, and yeah, so far so good. You just get found out and everything just goes to crap. But at least in a way that you know, the gameplay tends to, or seems to suit the gameplay. So everything is functioning in the world as it should, like all the different animals that are interacting, the forces of nature, you know, the enemy suspicion. It's just, you know, very different from the last game where some random plane would fall out of the sky and explode in a fiery mass, which of course wouldn't happen. But I'm just saying, you know, things that you could never expect to happen would happen. Far Cry 3, though, much tighter experience. You know, it's very respectable game of 2013 or 2012, excuse me. It is crazy and nonsensical and has a really dumb opening that's pretty fun, and I'm not really into it, mainly because the story is not compelling me to keep playing in the least. You know, the gunplay is totally fun. It's great to jump in there and kill some animals, craft some crap, run around the islands, do a bunch of nonsense. but it just doesn't have the compelling force that several other games had in their stories. You know, sure, there's narrative, there's things going on in the world, you know, there's plenty of stuff to be invested in and to ingest in terms of that content, but But is it meaningful? No, not by any means. Is it driving? Definitely not. And you know, if you want a fun, totally functional and fantastic sandbox to play in, unlike you've been able to have all year, you know, then Far Cry 3 is a phenomenal means to do so. But in terms of, you know, an overall package, you know, it, much like many games this year, it seems to be functioning. It seems to have taken one point and ran with it very, very well, and you know, has become this exemplar of success in one area, and in all others, it just seems to be completely standard and uninteresting. Much like, you know, oh, I don't want to get into names right now. So let's see here. It's been a while since I've done a podcast. It's been actually close to 2 weeks, and last week, or 2 weeks ago, actually, or wait, no, let me think here. Last week, yes, Friday, I was excited because the Spike VGAs, Spike Video Game Awards, were going down, as they do every year. And like every year, everybody wants to comment on them, talk shit about them, criticize the awards in every way possible, you know, and for good reason. You know, there's the show has a terrible track record, and you know, even though it is trying to be something bigger than it usually attain, or than it usually is, or I should say something more professional than it usually is, you know, it definitely kind of falls short every year. But I mean, I think that part of that, I should back up. It's easy to hate on the Spike VGAs, and you know, for good reason. It's seems more of a variety hour than it is an award show. A lot less focus on crediting people for their successes, and a lot more pomp and circumstance and bullshit with, you know, Hollywood actors and actresses coming on stage and pseudo celebrities, you know, talking mess about whatever, or having some B-list host getting up there and talking or doing some dumbass skit behind the scenes to you know, kind of just appeal to this impossible crowd that may or may not actually exist in the video games world. So Spike has it tough, you know, but I also feel like they do such a good job of having this thing every year. You know, regardless, it is an event. It is something that people do watch, despite watching it sort of with an ironic smirk the entire time, and just waiting to nitpick every little thing that goes wrong in the show. Which, of course, you know, I'm not saying I'm above. When silly crap happens, of course, I want to call it out, but you know, I always enjoy watching, and I like the reveals, and I would definitely say this year has been better than most. I think it was a little bit more restrained. There was less wackiness. Sam Jackson, though doing his Sam Jackson thing, still did a pretty solid job as being sort of an anchor for everything that was going on. As usual, not enough of a focus on the awards, you know, like they always do. It's an award is present, or is given. People come up on stage, and then in the bottom left corner of the screen, there's sort of like a little ticker tape running that says, "And this game also won the award for XYZ and A1, 2, and 3. And, you know, even though they're walking up for award W. So, you know, it was what it was, and like I said, on the whole, very good, and definitely making waves in the video game space right now. Excuse me. So we'll go over a few of the awards here. I also want to say something that's totally cool about this. You know, it just definitely struck me. I was watching it Friday night on Spike on the big TV upstairs, and you know, just sitting in the living room with Hunter and myself watching the VGAs, and then halfway through I got booted to the basement to watch it, and I turned on my Xbox and decided to stream it through there because of, you know, nonsense happening with basement TV. And I was just totally amazed. You know, it was one of those dumb moments of like, oh man, I'm ready for this. Like turning on my Xbox, clicking on the thing, and then just watching TV. Like it was Spike with Spike commercials. Totally weird, but totally cool. Like, hey man, I'm watching TV on my Xbox. Like real ass, real TV. You know, not ESPN 8 that's going over, you know, strictly college foosball highlights or something. It was a real TV. So it makes me super excited for the future of a la carte TV through my game system, which is all I want for the next iteration of hardware. That's it. That's just give me a fucking Apple TV and I'm set, man. Joking. So I was watching Spike TV on my Xbox, and I was partaking in their integrated audience experience by running the Smart Glass app on my phone, and I was, hold on to your butts, completely underwhelmed by it because, you know, it was like asking you, like, hey, what do you want to see in this next skit? Samuel L. Jackson slapping some guy? Samuel L. Jackson holding up a Zelda sword? Samuel L. Jackson teabagging Master Chief or Skip? And you could use your controller to choose any of these things, which had absolutely no bearing on anything. Except he came out on stage holding a Halo gun or something like that, which, who gives a shit? So I used the smart glass option to be controlling this stuff while I was watching this, and you know, in what could have been a very, very cool integrated experience from smart glass to a TV show that I was watching, like, you know, what would you imagine your phone app, you know, doing while you're watching this award show? Well, let me tell you. Wouldn't it make sense if you could view all the categories that have been, or that have yet to come up, and you could see who is nominated for them and potentially some information about those nominations and those things that are on it, like sort of like a little wiki sort of database on that sort of stuff. And then you could, be following in real time, the things that have been done, and maybe even give you some analytics, like some graphs or shit like that, that shows who's voting for what or how that ended up getting, you know, it's just some cool nitty gritty stuff that they wouldn't want to show in a more public venue. But no, I was using the Smart Glass app, and, I could click on last year's awards and the winners. Yeah. So, great use of the Smart Glass app to while I'm watching the TV, you know, hey, you can go check out 2011's winner of Best Action Game or whatever the hell it was. So, though exciting to be watching it on my Xbox, underwhelming with what the future of Smart Glass or the future of Xbox Connectainment had in store. The end. So let's go over some of the awards here. I'm sure you're just on the edge of your seat waiting for this. So we'll start it off here. Game of the Year, Walking Dead, the game. Nominees other than that were Assassin's Creed 3, Dishonored, Journey, Mass Effect 3. So I you know, hey, whoa. Pretty cool that The Walking Dead gets Game of the Year on the Spike Video Game Awards. I would say, hey, you know, the games that it went up against, yeah, that's great. It definitely deserves that nomination, or that victory. Kind of weird that it's going to be a small-time little Telltale game like that. Who would expect it? You know, a little Cinderella story. That's great and everything. Wonderful that that's getting the praise it deserves. But, you know, you can take your conspiracy theorists bullshit and shove it if you're thinking, oh, maybe they're just doing it because AMC and Activision and all that bull crap. Regardless, it was a great game this year, and that's good that it, you know, got that award. Yeah. So, other awards for Spike Video Game Awards. Studio of the Year, Telltale Games. Character of the Year went to Borderlands, or Claptrap from Borderlands 2. Seems like a very fitting win based on its competition. The Connor from Assassin's Creed, Commander Shepard from Mass Effect 3, Master Chief, Halo 4, Menendez, Raul Menendez from Black Ops 2. Yeah, you know, the more that I think about it, the more I realize that all those characters that aren't Claptrap are just complete shells of uninteresting. And the only reason why Raul Menendez is really cool is because he is a well-fleshed-out villain, which is like saying he is a very brightly painted fire escaper. You know, he is some fantastically created secondary content that normally doesn't get enough attention that it does. Let's see here. The other kind of boat rocking information or award that was given out this year was Entertainment Weekly and Spike VGA Best Game of the Decade, which went to Half-Life 2. So Spike VGA gave out Game of the Decade, you know, Half-Life 2, and the Valve team that worked on that, definitely deserving. You know, the other contenders were Batman, Arkham City, BioShock, Legend of Zelda, Wind Waker, Mass Effect 2. There's more. Portal, Red Dead Redemption, Shadow of the Colossus, Wii Sports, and World of Warcraft. Yeah, you know, all of those, well, 70% of those, really, really good contenders to that category. Portal definitely would be up there, I think. World of Warcraft, can't deny that game's importance. Shadow of the Colossus, again, you know, very, very strong contender there. And BioShock, of course, has provided a lot to video games. So each one of those things, you know, well, mostly each one of those things, very, very competent contenders. And it's great that Half-Life 2 got it. Then we start breaking things down into, you know, more granular categories like best Xbox game, best PS3 game, Wii U game, PC game. Now this is where things get interesting in a very non-general listener sort of way. So the reason why this is interesting is because though the winners were exclusives to those consoles, the nominees tended to be multi-platform. For example, if we take the Xbox 360 Game of the Year, the winner was Halo 4. The nominees were Assassin's Creed 3, a multi-platform game. Borderlands 2, a multi-platform game. Dishonored, a multi-platform game. Interesting. PlayStation 3, the winner, or PlayStation 3 Game of the Year. Journey, the nominees, Assassin's Creed 3, again. Dishonored, and Borderlands 2, same as before. So, multi-platform games, and then one exclusive. I didn't even know they had a Wii/Wii U category. The winner was New Super Mario Bros. U, of course. Because what else would it be? The Last Story, Xenoblade Chronicles, or Zombie U? Maybe any of those. PC game, oddly enough, was XCOM Enemy Unknown, which was a multi-platform game. And then the nominees were Diablo 3, Guild Wars 2, and Torchlight 2, which, crazily enough, are all PC exclusives. So, yeah, that's some weirdness going on right there. More ammunition for the craziness of how awards are going this day, or at this time. If we scoot down here to more awards, look at here, best independent game, which is defined by fuck all. Who knows what best independent game means? The winner is Journey, which is a game that is from that game company, a small Canadian video game company that has done exclusive titles through Sony PlayStation and is funded and has games funded by Sony PlayStation. The other competitors, the other nominees are going to be Dust and Elysian Tale, a game done by one man, Fez, a game done by roughly one crazy man, and then Mark of the Ninja, you know, potentially the best in terms of gameplay of all of those. So interesting choices made there. And in terms of indie status, I don't even know if any of those would be considered true indie, because so many of the console owners, like Microsoft and PlayStation, have thrown money at those developers to make their game. So is that really indie anymore? You know, it'd be like let's see here, since I know music really well, it would be like if, man, you're really good at this, Griff. Like if Fender Guitars sponsored some tiny little three man guitar trio that has only had mediocre success, and they're like, you play your song on our guitars, and we'll give you $1 million. To write your music if you only use our guitars when you perform. Okay, cool. So I think we got there in the end, maybe. But I'm trying to say that they're not so independent. Right, okay, great. Best performance by a human male and human female. Yeah. Good choices, I guess. You know, you got Melissa Hutchinson as Clementine from The Walking Dead. Sure, why not? There's, you know, and then the male winner was Damian Clark as Handsome Jack, Borderlands 2. Definitely the right choice on that one. okay, we got, best downloadable game, another absolutely mind blowing category here. So best downloadable game, the winner being The Walking Dead, the game. Nominees being Fez, Journey, Sound Shapes. Now, The Walking Dead is available on a retail disc. Journey, also available on retail disc. Fez and Sound Shapes, I believe, are actually... I think Sound Shapes may be purchasable. I don't want to say purchasable in real life for the PS or for the Vita, but maybe. So let's just say 50-50 of those aren't technically only downloadable. I think, what is it? Best Studio, you know, another one that's pretty... that makes plenty of sense here is definitely the right choice. Best studio of the year is going to be, or studio of the year is Telltale Games, for The Walking Dead. You know, you got 343 Industries, Halo, they're definitely, deserve it. Arcane Studios for Dishonored, sure, whatever. And, Gearbox for Borderlands 2. Yeah. Sure, makes sense. One of the more interesting things was during the show, something I noticed was not a single mention of Nintendo products at all during the 2 hours it was running. So no Wii awards given in prime time, no Nintendo exclusive games announced during prime time. Just an interesting little thing that I observed. The other thing I observed, which I think that has gone completely unnoticed, Jack Black of Tenacious D, Kyle Gass, those two did the end song about Phoenix or something like that. Some, I don't know, it was one of their rock things. It was fine, but they had a giant Phoenix inflatable bird in the background that was taking up a lot of the stage, and it looked like a giant dong. So I just want to go on the record and say, hey, anybody else notice that that song had a giant dong in the background, and that was totally made sense since it was Tenacious D, but really weird because I didn't hear anybody else say anything about it. Well done. Spike video. Some things that people are griping about, Sam Jackson's Emmer Effer drops that were near nonstop, and his quotes from the movies that he's been in. Yeah, fine, whatever. He's the host of it. Get over it. That's what he does. He's a rock. You know what he's going to do. He's going to be Sam Jackson. You know, it's fine. Totally fine. You know, compared to years previous, he did a phenomenal job just kind of being predictable and being dumb in a totally fine way. And I would say those little skits that he did where he was, where video games were cranked up to Sam Jackson mode, and he had a little bit, they were all fine. Totally unoffensive. Somewhat offensive, though, was the Dark Souls 2 announcement, brought to light by Jessica Alba, a lot of talk is happening right now about, oh, Jessica Alba, you're so not a gamer, and I can't believe that you would go up there and say this stuff, and, you know, internet things. And then the other end of it is like, oh, she's fine, whatever, she did a good job announcing it. And I think what people need to, since I have this soapbox here all to myself, and you're forced to listen to my opinions on things, thank you. I think that the way that the Spike VGAs need to go is not in the way that so many people claim, where they say celebrities need to not be in it, and we need to focus more on the video game celebrities like John Carmack and Ken Levine, and throw up, you know, even Cliff Bleszinski, put him up there. He's a good showman. Like, yeah, that's great. More of those people is wonderful. But there's also absolutely nothing wrong with having somebody like Jessica Alba get up there and announce a category or announce a new product. I think that's great. And it does, you know, definitely give some mainstream appeal to people who may not be interested 100% in the video game, who may not have their pulse on the video game scene like so many other people do, especially the people who get paid to write about video games when they watch the VGAs and then they think, oh man, this is what everybody's going to think about for video games for the next year until the VGAs. And boy, are people, you know, boy, do those things just suck because they belittle gamers and they feed them wrong information, and it's just insulting. No, it's not insulting. It's fine. You know, if Jessica Alba's going to get up there and talk about her or announce some category, that's great. I think that's great. Now, if she gets up there and she talks about how she's been a longtime Mario fan of her entire life and she hates the first Goomba or whatever the hell she got up there talking about, like, that's where the line is drawn for me. You know, it's a little frustrating and insulting when that happens. And that's the part that I don't like, where it's like, you know, get real famous Hollywood attractive people up there to talk about video games. But you don't need to get famous Hollywood attractive people to get up there to tell me that playing video games is okay and liking video games is okay. I don't need them to be telling me that. You know, maybe there's a certain Spike viewing population that some brain in a jar figured out does need to have them to, or does need to have that handsome person up there saying video games are cool, kid. So you know, obviously I'm just one person, and I my opinion only is my opinion. But what I'm saying is, don't take the celebrities out. Just don't focus so much on video games being something that is cool to do by, as endorsed by these celebrities. Instead, use the celebrities as what they should be used as just, you know, pieces in this presentation. Make them act. Go up there and present this award. Talk about the award. Be informative. Read off a cue card. You don't need to read your life story off a cue card. Something that's actually interesting and informative. And the other little suggestion I have is, why not pair them? Just pair them. Put Troy Baker up there with Jessica Alba to announce Demon Souls or Dark Souls 2. You know, you've got Troy Baker, you know, totally fine, inoffensive looking, attractive male who is a major part of video games right now, standing up there with Jessica Alba, the worst of the Jessicas, and they can, you know, have a little banter back and forth. She can talk about Mario. He can talk about every other video game ever because he's voiced somebody in all of them. And it can just be a little bit more, you know, candid and natural. And, you know, you get the best of both worlds. You get celebrity appearance and you get game dude. I'm sure John Carmack would say, okay, why not? I'll go up there and stand next to Emma Stone and present some award for voice acting or you know, present some award for slickness of traction, sticky snack-sized game bits. I don't know. It's just whatever. I'm lost. I lost it. But to get back on track here, so the Spike VGAs have also prompted quite a bit of talk about one trailer in specific that was shown. And it was a trailer shown for the game called The Phantom Pains. So while I was, I'll paint the picture here. So I'm watching this upstairs and, you know, the scene opens with some dude from The Big Bang Theory or something explaining how this was that and that was this. And my mind has been blown because I thought that up was down and left was right. And I didn't even know that things could be things. And then cue this trailer up for some game, which I didn't know what it was. You know, it's a first-person perspective. Dude wakes up in a very sterile-looking hospital room, looking around. There's a doctor there and a nurse, and he says, oh, you're awake or something like that. And then whoever this person who you're looking through the eyes of raises what looks like a prosthetic arm. And then shit starts going crazy, you know. There's a cut to scene of other guy in hospital outfit with bandage face, who is obviously voiced by Kiefer Sutherland, everybody's favorite voice actor. So I mean, obviously this is going to be a World at War sequel, Call of Duty World at War. Just kidding. So he is dragging whoever this main character of this game is, or whoever this person is. Let's call them Ahab. Sure. So Ahab is getting drug through this hospital, crawling, tripping over things, trying to regain balance while Kiefer is shoving them down, holding them, like pushing them into cover while spotlights and things are searching through floors. So more is revealed as this trailer goes on. You know, there's some sort of military presence that's going through this hospital facility and up to no good. Why are they up to no good? Because, well, they're just slaughtering wholesale a ton of these patients in these, you know, you can tell they're patients because they're wearing gowns, just murdering them. Then things become on fire, and that's when the shark is jumped, because when things are on fire, we start seeing things that are just a little weirder, like a man standing in flames who has very distinct thighs. And then we see a unicorn that's made primarily out of fire driving itself through the fire. I didn't just have a stroke. It's just really weird. Meanwhile, we cut back to the reality of these, of one-armed man and the no-face Sutherland scrambling around the hospital taking cover. And then finally, you know, we get to this scene where they dive, you know, behind this window, and there's a helicopter shining a light through the window, and it pans outside of the hospital, and there's this, you know, very hind-looking helicopter, very just a war machine of a helicopter, spotlighting and shooting up this hospital. And then all of a sudden, behind the tree line, erupts this gigantic flaming Final Fantasy Spirits Within phantom whale. Motherfucking whale. Whale! Just jumps out and eats this helicopter. So at this point, okay, I should rewind here. So when I was seeing this trailer, I was like, oh, this has a very Konami vibe to it. And I'm thinking, is this the fabled Kojima Silent Hill, possibly? Because hospital, and there's a lot of focus on the butt of these characters, since their hospital gowns were, you know, open in the back, and there's a lot of man ass, which is always hilarious from Konami. So yeah, I thought, okay, you know, Silent Hill, probably, you know, weird burning shit, hospitals, one-armed people, horrific, nightmarish sort of scenario. And then, you know, weird, jerky movements and kind of a very smooth look to the characters with a really sterile and detailed look to everything in the setting, which just kind of yelled Konami to me, specifically Kojima. And finally, at the end of this whale jumping through it, you know, it cuts to this thing that says the Phantom Pains. And then after that, we see some human shape floating off the ground, and then a close kind of sidelong shot of something like very horror movie-esque levitating person or whatever. And that's your little stinger on the end there. So, that's what happened. And if you haven't seen the trailer, you should probably go watch it and see how accurate my shitty description was. Because immediately after this happened, apparently everybody in the entire world knew that it was a Metal Gear Solid 5 trailer. I guess this surprised me. I can see it now. And if you know, you go to like NeoGAF, there's a thread for it, which very thoroughly dissects every single frame of that trailer, and in moon landing, JFK conspiracy levels of detail, goes into how every little thing means that it is a Metal Gear Solid 5 game. So, you know, pointing out the sockets on the wall to the flower petals floating in the potentially hallucinogenic dream states, or the thighs of Colonel Volgan from Metal Gear Solid 3, to the guns that and uniforms that match up with characters in the Metal Gear it is, fucking whatever that earlier trailer was this year for Ground Zeroes, for that Metal Gear game. So people making all sorts of crazy comparisons between that and you know, harnesses that held the arm in place that looks like Psycho Mantis. And, I forget the best part. So the studio that is supposedly behind this is called Moby Dick Studios, which hasn't existed until this point. And the producer and head developer for this project is somebody along the lines of Joachim Ogerson or something. Aogren? Let's just say it doesn't matter. Immediately, the dead giveaway for this potentially being, or for this being a Konami Metal Gear game was the name, Joachim whatever. The Joachim part is an anagram for Kojima of Metal Gear fame. And the last name has the word ogre in it, O-G-R-E, hence, you know, the Project Ogre that has been talked about in hushed tones for the past 2 years or whatever, as to be the next Konami project, or the next Kojima studio project. So compelling evidence as to it being a Metal Gear Solid game. How is it going to fit in with the Metal Gear Solid games that are already coming out, like Ground Zeroes, potentially another Metal Gear game? Is this really Project Ogre? Two Metal Gear games coming out simultaneously? Frickin', that'd be the greatest thing in the entire world. I would love it. That's kind of crazy. I can get behind, you know, if one comes out for Vita and old systems and the other one comes out for new systems and you have to play both to get the full story, Hell yeah. That's the kind of nonsense I am all about. So, you know, there are plenty of other dissections and ways that people have drawn parallels between Kojima and this game called The Phantom Pains, and you can find them all on your local internets. So I'm not going to go into any more because there's plenty of information out there. So the VGAs, as I also said, you know, had that weird announcement for Dark Souls 2, had a trailer for The Last of Us, which was very good. Showed you know, more people, humans that didn't seem quite as crazy and more willing to talk with you. And then on the other end of the spectrum had more of the mushroom people being shown. Some other trailers, something George Washington, Assassin's Creed 3 DLC, who gives a crap about that? There was a trailer for, oh balls, I forget what else there was. Gears of War Judgment, which may have introduced somebody new who I don't know, I'm not a Gears of War fanatic, but there was a very Dolph Lundgren looking motherfucker. I don't know who he was, but that just cemented my conviction that Gears of War is slowly becoming a parody of itself by becoming more and more like The Expendables. There was another trailer for Castlevania Lords of Shadow 2, really cool looking trailer, some gameplay or some in-game footage, maybe. It was gameplay, kind of hard to tell. Everything seemed, you know, pretty scripted, not a lot of what you might be actually doing in the game, but a lot more exposition and showing that, you know, you will be in fact playing as Dracula bitches. Dracula comma bitches. Let's see here. Tomb Raider, BioShock Infinite had a trailer that people are going gaga over, and I guess the best I can say about it is I don't know how to feel. Yeah. So that was it. Some musical performances. All in all, a great VGA, I think. I think it was one of the best I've seen in a long time. I love the fact that maybe Kojima just punked the entire world with a freaking fake troll announcement of a mainstream numbered video game. Like, who does that? Why would people be angry about that? And you know, the complaint that I've heard way too many times is, you know, that's really cool and everything that he's going to market it like that, that it's going to be marketed. But what happens in a year when kids go to the video game store and they say, hey, I want to play that Phantom Pains. And then the guy behind the counter has to say, well, actually, it's Metal Gear Solid 5 Phantom Pains. The Phantom Pains is actually a trick. Like, yeah, anybody who watches the VGAs is already going to know that because they're on Xbox or they're on PlayStation or they are going to school and somebody there has already told them there is no such thing. It's probably like kids know this stuff. People know this stuff. The uninformed population is a million times more informed than you would imagine. And if in fact this is going to be like something that like if somebody goes to the store and is like, oh man, I saw this really awesome trailer for a game at the VGAs about a hook armed man who was in a hospital and a giant space whale ate a helicopter. No, nobody is going to go to a store asking for that unless they're, you know, not being bothered with face eating because they just, you know, very responsibly smoked a ton of bath salts. People aren't going to be going out to ask for that thing. So there's not going to be brand confusion to say, am I getting Metal Gear Solid 5 or am I getting the weird space whale game? People are going to understand that thing. So yeah. Okay. I'm done. Let's see here. So I talked a little bit about playing Far Cry 3. Had a good time, kind of, you know, narratively and story-wise not being drawn in one bit. And in the Penny Arcade report, you can go check this out online, pennyarcade.com. Sophie Prell did a really interesting story, an interview with Far Cry 3's Jeffrey Yohalem. Anyway, this individual who was a major figure in the Far Cry 3 game just kind of goes into detail about how we're not getting it. Critics, players, detractors, we're just not getting it. We're not understanding the true metaphor that is there. And, you know, the game starts with a quote from Alice in Wonderland, something, something, rabbit hole, something, something, first steps, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I'm so freaking tired of this bullshit that I don't pay attention to it. So basically what was said was, you know, there is meaning for the narrative, and it's right there in front of people. It's just, it's not a worn out trope, but it is, but it knows it is. So maybe we don't know what it's trying to say because it knows what it's trying to do. And if we knew that it knew that it was in on the joke with us, then we would think it was a lot more profound than it was leading on to be, because it just seems silly in the first place. And yeah, no, I meant every single word that I just said there. It's crazy. You read this article and it just sits poorly with me. You know, I read this and Sophie did a great job of asking questions and definitely not pulling punches. I was saying like, well, then how is it wrong? Why are we reading it? How are we reading into it wrong? And you know, this fella, Jeffrey, goes into quite some detail on specifics on how the imagery of the LA less than average Joe is over glorified in his head, and we're playing through his eyes, so we're seeing what's happening in his head, and is it real or is it not real? We don't know because of the quote from through the looking glass and the Alice in Wonderland. So, you know, an interesting read, and I'm not going to go into anything more on that because I feel like the best thing you can do is read it and then get the vibe or get the feel for yourself that just something is up with this interpretation, and smarter people than me can probably write a better response as to why this we're doing it wrong critique of us is crazy. You know, I could give it a go, but I'll abstain and let your opinions be untainted by mine. Ugh. Let's see here. Hunter and I, the previous night, Hunter sat down with Xbox Live Indie Arcade and downloaded a handful of just some of the most atrocious, crappy games in the entire world. And it was so much fun. My favorite being No Luca No, the game in which you need to protect your overlarge cereal bowl from your either pygmy adult cat with your baby arm or your totally normal size cat that's been in a reverse experiment of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids or Honey, I Blew Up the Baby, but to a bowl of cereal. So the perspective is freaking weird. And you're just pressing this stick in a direction to swat this cat away. And let's just say that Spike should have looked into whoever was the voice actor for this. Excuse me. Because every time that that cat gets swatted away, somebody's voice says, "No, Luca,
No, Luca, stop, Luca. Stop it. Stop, Luca, no. No.
And then if Luca succeeds in getting to the breakfast, an adorable little cat tongue licks up the milk in the gigantic cereal bowl while the main character speaks aloud his woes of, fine, just eat my breakfast then, Luca. So a laugh riot, absolutely hilarious. For a good time, go to Xbox Indie or Xbox Live Indie Arcade. Great, great stuff there to be found. We've also been playing a ton of Borderlands 2. Hunter's been really getting into playing that, and I've been going with him through the story and playing as a different character. And man, it's been awesome. You know, just playing that game again and playing it with somebody has been a ton of fun. Totally reminded me of how great Borderlands 2 was, and playing it with somebody else, you know, although I can't buckle down and read all the text, it is much more fun in like a just fun double thumbs up scooter backflip, bro. Like, oh man, wakeboarding, fun. Like, it is just raw good times. Yeah, so that's what we're doing. We're playing Borderlands 2, and it's good. Let's see here. Another article you might be interested in reading in the New York Times on 12/15 of this year. An article was written that was kind of a character piece for good old Bobby Kotick, CEO of Activision Blizzard. Everybody's favorite person to hate on in the industry. An interesting piece interviewing him, kind of just getting his perspective on, well, not even getting his perspective, but kind of just him saying, hey, stop it. Stop making fun of me all the time. You know, the piece is just a fluff piece that's trying to paint him in a better light when the name Steve Jobs is dropped on multiple occasions, saying, citing his influence in Bobby Kotick's life. So, you know, when you are the hot shit of the year of, you know, if you can attach your name to this guy, you're golden. Obviously, this piece is a good old, you know, Bobby Kotick fluff job. Now, on the other hand, it's a very good piece to read. Definitely humanizing. Makes you want to dislike the guy less. And, you know, it has some good stories about him that are, you know, somewhat endearing. But, of course, just ring so strongly of the Steve Jobs biography of just this zany man with a dream who isn't afraid to piss off people. I would encourage you to read the article again, much like before, forming your opinions for yourself. But you know, just be aware, just be cautious. Don't get sucked into it too far. And you know, maybe on the other hand, it's a good reminder for people on the games journalism side to let's not quite maybe pin everything on Robert Kotick's decisions. Maybe not the fact that the Tony Hawk ride sucked ass. Maybe you don't want to say that was Bobby Kotick's fault. You know, it's a group of people. It's not a single individual. So it takes a village, you know, not just one man who's ruining your dreams of having a better World of Warcraft or something like that. So happy 25th anniversary, Mega Man. You might have forgotten, because fucking Capcom forgot too, that this is the 25th anniversary of Mega Man. And as much as new shit about video games likes to be teased, the anniversary to whatever fucking year it could be, the 7th anniversary of Resident Evil, of Leon S. Kennedy, well, that wouldn't quite be the 7th, would it? Of that dude from Killswitch. You know, it, that if you want to, you know, video game are notorious for overblowing anniversaries. You know, it's not like every 5 years it's Titanic. Remember the love. We're not getting beat over the head with, oh, remember this game that came out 5 years ago? That's a round number. We'll release it again in theaters. So you know, in games, we're constantly hearing about anniversaries, and I'm getting sick of it, is what I'm trying to say. But 25th anniversary for Mega Man, and what is being done for Mega Man? A shitty fan-made game called, well, I shouldn't say shitty. It is a less-than-stellar fan game called Street Fighter X Mega Man. And this is using Street Fighter characters as the 8 robot masters that Mega Man has to go kill in stages that are there are levels that are themed after the stage of those characters. So whoop-de-fucking-do. Oh, by the way, it's a PC game. You know, when you think Mega Man, you think personal computer. So, you know, sometime in December of 1987, Mega Man came out for the Nintendo Entertainment System or Famicom. Nobody fucking, well, I should say, Wikipedia was unclear about this when I did some research a couple hours ago. When did actually Mega Man come out? I don't know. So, to celebrate the 25th anniversary, here we go. And, yeah, you know, you know, somebody else talk right here for a second while I grab a drink. Oh wait, nobody else is here. So Mega Man, in the last year has been shat upon quite vigorously. You know, you've got, Mega Man Legends 3, the fan sourced game, which was coming along quite nicely. Apparently had a beta out. It was playable, had art. It was, you know, the community was involved with it. Game got canned because it wasn't going in a direction that, Capcom was liking. You know, you had Mega Man Universe, that weird Korean-y game where it was like building blocks or something. I don't fucking know. Had a great anime intro trailer. That was pretty cool. And that was Mega Man, and that was playable, and now that's gone. And in the last 2 years, we've had two downloadable Mega Man number games. So 9 and 10, Mega Man 9 and 10. And nothing this year. So some shitty computer game, you know. And even if the game ends up being totally amazing, like, it just seems wrong. Like, it just seems like a disservice to fans. I'm sure Capcom is trying to figure out what they're actually doing with their products because, you know, I don't think really Capcom, because Platinum Games isn't really telling them what to do, because they aren't Platinum Games and they don't know what to do with their titles. I don't know how this works. What I'm trying to say is Capcom doesn't know what to do, and that's getting ever more apparent. What with their crazy DRM stuff for the 3DS games, the weird little bite-sized DLC stuff that came out in regards to Dead Rising that were cool ideas and then bad ideas. I don't know, rebooting something like Devil May Cry and not rebooting some of their other franchises, offering Super Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition for free. Just, I mean, what's going on? What's going on in Capcom? Who knows? So, you know, this Mega Man thing is kind of a fiasco. Well, I mean, what's happening? No love for the Blue Bomber, you know, it's just a PC game that's made by fans, not even made by Capcom. You know, it's, I mean, hey, that's cool, but what? Yeah, I don't know. Let's see here, what else we got? So that's, it's getting towards the end of the year. Actually, it's pretty much almost the end of the year for video games. There's pretty much no more releases. A handful of games here and there that nobody gives a shit about. And then it's January and we start this all again. I mean, and then we start this all again. Yeah, right. So positive inflection, right? Like again. So we start it all again. And then we never talk about 2012 ever again, because that's how things work in video games. Unless you're saying that the last year was better, because you always say that. So one thing that keeps coming up one of many things that keeps coming up in sort of these end of the year, what the fuck do we talk about things in other podcasts, is Kickstarter. I'm getting tired. Kickstarter. People are crapping on Kickstarter. They're saying, oh man, this service was doomed to failure from the start. I can't believe that so many people invested in it. I was there from the beginning saying, this isn't going to work. People are just going to, you're wasting your money. Now, if that's true, and nothing ends up coming through, none of the games I invested in, none of the Double Fine Adventures, the Banner Saga, that Republic with the Logan or something, none of this stuff ends up happening. That's fine. It's a risk I'm willing to take. I'll spend $20 to help out, you know, people who have a good track record to make something that they're passionate about. If somebody said, give me $20 because it'll realize my dreams that don't include doing a ton of drugs, then hell yeah. Like, if you're going to make something, you can say, hey, you might be able to be a part of this if it ends up working out. Frickin' yeah, that's great. So everybody who's crapping on Kickstarter, you know, like, just back off, all right? Don't make fun of Britney, or however that goes, you know? Let's not hate it. I think that one of the best things that Kickstarter has done is actually been, I don't want to say it, well, has been, it's been an awakening for a lot of people into how, well, for some people into how video games actually go, you know? How time budgeting and all that stuff ends up working out, you know. If people were saying, like, so Double Fine adventure game was supposed to come out this year, right at the end of this year, six months in development, and then bam blam, it's out. That didn't happen. It got pushed back, and they said it's going to get pushed back. And I think this is just a good reality check for people who are, you know, maybe like a little further towards the hardcore end, but maybe not all the way in the deep, eyeballs deep, crazy, eat, breathe, sleep video games. So you know that things do get pushed back. It's not just like these evil publisher a-holes or the game suddenly wasn't ready because somebody died. You know, there are good reasons, like budgeting, time budgeting, you know, bug crunching, all these different things go into it. And I think that Kickstarter is doing a very good job in showing people that, hey, even though you paid $10 to this thing that you're supposed to get some shitty reward for, you may not see that for 2 years. And it's easy to give money into it when you're promised something back. But you know, will your patience last? I think that most people's patience will last. And I think that it's going to be, you know, the critics and the people who have the larger podiums who are going to get up there and decry Kickstarter and crap on it and say, this isn't working because we're not seeing results right now. And people are upset about that. And I think in reality, people aren't upset about that. And if they are, they're just internet upset, which means they'll get over it in 5 more minutes when some other pretty person says something dumb about something else. So I'm tired of the Kickstarter bashing. Let's just let it go, you know? Even Penny Arcade, right? They did their no ad thing, pay so much money and meet their goal, and they're going to reduce the amount of ads on their sites. Like, basically, that was just a screw. You know, I paid $20 to have a subscription to Penny Arcade, or I paid $20 and I gave it to them, to Mike and Jerry, because they deserve it. They do great work. You know, if they created a public tip jar that said, hey, give me some cash and we'll do something different with the website, I'd say, okay, sure. You guys did some good stuff. Like, I've been enjoying your content for years. Here's a few bucks. Thank you. So lay off, man. Lay off. Let's see what else we have written down here. I think... think we're to the end of the list. Since it is the end of the year, 2012, middle of December, end of the world happening here pretty soon, next day or so. I got my top 10 video games for this year hammered out, figured out, nailed down. It took some wrestling, and I'm still not even positive about everything, but you know, I got it all done. Written it down. So if you go to bossbarrel.com, you know, the website, and you'll see that there, and you can read my explanation for each one as to why I believe they fit in my top 10. And like I say in my little intro blurb, you know, this feels like the most difficult year I've done one of these, and that's not saying much since I've only done, you know, two years previous that I can remember. I may have done something for 08 or something, or 09, and I just slipped my mind because of, you know, stuff. But I think this was the most challenging, you know. It was things, I just was wrestling with the order for a long time. Even my number one game of the year, I had a tough time pinning it down as to what it should be. There's no just obvious choice. It, you know, it took some thinking, and the order didn't just flow naturally from that. I had to sit down, and when I was writing it, I would actually write out my description and then think to myself, you know, I'd reread it, edit it, and say, this just doesn't feel like it should be here. I think I need to reevaluate this order, and, you know, I may or may not have done so and put things differently. So just off the top of my head, my number 10 was Max Payne. My number 9 was Paper Mario Sticker Star. My number 8 was XCOM Enemy Unknown. Both of those games towards the back of my list, unfortunately, because I never finished them. And I don't feel like they could have been higher, but I don't feel like I gave them the amount of time they deserved. You know, and potentially that's part of the game's problem, and potentially that's my problem, but I believe they were great games this year, and that's why they're kind of on the back end of my list. Max Payne definitely on the list, but you know, kind of a dark horse there. So let's see, that leaves me with what, 7, which could be anything. 7-6 was another video game. 5 was Black Ops, Call of Duty Black Ops 2, because of its choices that were offered. I thought that was well deserved, or fascinating, interesting. Number 4, did I say 4 or did I say 6 or 5? Shit. 5, right? 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, now I'm all confused. Okay, so 10. Maybe I should just pull up the list here. So number 10, like I said, was Max Payne. Number 9, Paper Mario Sticker Star. Number 8, XCOM Enemy Unknown. Number 7 was Mass Effect 3. Good game overall, but just a lot of little errors that stuck out, little missteps that stuck out, and left a sour taste in my mouth. And I, you know, I think that's pretty obvious. Number 6, Call of Duty Black Ops 2. Like I said, the choices. Number 5, Persona 4 Arena. Hey, I love me Persona 4. And more story about Persona people. Even though it may not be in an RPG context, it was still a fine fighting game. But it's just fucking more Persona. And what they potentially are setting up in the next game is even just the prospect of that is mind-blowing, is salivating. It is the best thing in the entire world if what they allude to is going to come true in Persona 5, and if this is the game that sets the stage for that, then hell yeah, this is good shit. Number 4, Spec Ops The Line. I would say the most artistic game this year, and I don't mean that in just sort of like a, oh man, you can't lose this game. what, you just talk with your friends and chirp and slide, okay, not to, okay, and flip, rotate directions and, what's some other artsy crap? You are the wind, man. No, I mean, it is an artistic-ass video game, because you don't see a lot of video games that are artistic through their own medium. Metal Gear Solid 4, potentially unintentionally such. Braid, you know, there are video games out there that are just powerful in what they do through their gaminess. And Spec Ops The Line is one of those games that you play, and when you're done, your mind is in a completely different world. Not in a game world sense, but like a oh my god, I just had an experience that is unlike anything else ever. Spec Ops The Line, definitely questioning what is your agency in a video game, what is war for a character in a video game, and what are you doing with all the killing? Why is all this happening? Asking so many questions and asking them indirectly through playing through a game, you know, it's different. It's something you've never seen before, and I highly recommend listening to the developer commentary afterwards to just have your mind further blown into pieces, because, man, it's good shit. Number three for me was Halo 4. You know, top three this year, just because, damn, that game is slick. You know, Halo 4 is a good game. Halo 4 is an exceptional game. It is mechanically the most sound video game you could play this year. You know, it is tight, it is smooth, it is every dumb adjective you could use to describe a game that really doesn't say a ton about it, but it plays, man. Like, it plays like a dream. It is wonderful. Even the multiplayer, I had a good time with. I don't even like multiplayer. You know, the Spec Ops, Spartan Ops stuff was fine. It just seemed to not really, like, it was fine for a way to play more stuff with friends and get some more story, but I just didn't really understand how it fit in with everything else, and it was good, and you know, free DLC is cool, and the main story was cool. Like, it was totally fine and intriguing as I was following on. I may feel like I missed stuff, as I said before, but man, Halo 4 make me want to love Halo. That says a lot. Number two is Borderlands 2. Pretty obvious choice. You know, probably the best game this year. Just a hell of a time. Can't really say. I mean, I don't even know what to say. This is probably the hardest one to write an explanation why this is number two for me. And I think it's just because it's more Borderlands. And that's really all that needs to be said is, you know, Borderlands was a great game. Borderlands was a phenomenal game. And it changed so much, did so many fantastic things. And Borderlands 2 takes all those little hiccups and all those, like, awkward little baby steps that Borderlands 2 was, or Borderlands was having issues with. And it smooths them all out, and it just makes everything what it should have been. And it's great. And it's funny. And it's pretty. And it's just a great, great game. And if you like Borderlands, and if you didn't like Borderlands, just give it a try. Like, it is a good goddamn time. You know, and the more that I play it, the more I'm starting to realize, like, yeah, you know, this game was amazing. There is so much good stuff packed into this thing. Like, you know, don't be afraid to love on it just because it may, you know, be a sequel that doesn't do a ton differently. Just does everything better. And my number one game for this year is Fez. I would encourage you to read why my number one game is Fez. And I can tell you, you know, you probably won't have the same experience if you go and you play Fez right now that I did. Well, I guarantee you won't, because part of it was that unfolding experience, that unfolding sort of journey that I was going on with other people online. Like, getting stuck, not knowing what to do, and searching it out, the answers, and them not necessarily being there. Watching it unfold, watching people piece it apart, you know, the cryptology side of this game was just so much fun, like solving these puzzles, you know, just crazy shit, like recording Morse code and translating it into left and right turns. You know, it just is something that you don't see in video games ever, and Fez did such a great job embracing the weird, and then part of it was playing it right when it came out and just kind of be a part of the zeitgeist and rolling with this wave of crazy video game puzzle shit that, you know, is gonna, it felt like you were gonna see something that nobody has ever seen before. And you know, it's just an experience that you don't come across for, like a solar eclipse or something. Like, it just doesn't happen very often, and it's exciting to be there and be a part of it, even though it, you know, is, you could potentially see it at any time through other means. It's that act of that moment and being there and watching it unfold and being a part of that everything. Like, it was so cool. And unfortunately that's not replicatable. Even still, I mean, it's a great game. Fez is, if you like puzzles, if you like sort of like kind of the mind-blowing cryptology side of things, like seeing puzzles and seeing stuff hidden on deeper layers, like, Fez is it, man. Fez is, that's what Fez is about. It's puzzles within a puzzle. It's like Russian nesting doll of puzzle, so. Yeah, my number one. 100%. So that covers my list of everything that I want to talk about for this week. I don't know what else to say. This is the weird part. So thank you for listening to Boss Barrel Radio. This has been Griff Hoffman. And sorry about the clicking. My mouth is so dry. It's been a great year, 2012. Though maybe not the best in maybe not the most prolific for video games, it was still a good year, and definitely excited for next year. Kind of not ready for it. I'd like to start seeing some more pushbacks. I'm getting nervous. But yeah, 2012 has been great. You know, it's been exciting. It's been disappointing. There's been a lot of bows. There's been a lot of trilogies that have been wrapped up. There's been a lot of just all sorts of crazy shit, like new hardware. The Wii U came out this year. The Vita came out. What the hell happened with those two things, you know? E3, what a bummer. Kickstarter, ooh-yeah. You know, 2012 has been a really cool year, man. I'm excited for 2013, and I just want to say again, thank you for listening to this shit, and I really appreciate it. I'm gonna keep going. Next year, we'll be back. Hopefully, more of us. On behalf of Andy, Ryan, Matt, Gene, Chris, anybody that's been on this before, thank you all for being a part of Boss Barrel Radio. Looking forward to having this conversation with you guys next year as more stuff comes out and we do it all again. And especially thank you to my loved ones, Jen and Hunter, for, you know, supporting me in this crazy project where I go hide for 2 hours and record this shit with my friends in the basement. So again, thank you, everyone. Keep reading the website. Keep listening and subscribing to the podcast. And comment. Send me an email, whatever you want to do. Get in contact with me. It's not difficult. And I can't say it enough. Thank you. 2012 has been great, and we'll be back with Game of the Year stuff as a whole next year at the beginning of the year. And I'm scared because new games are already going to be coming out at that point. So yeah, this has been Boss Barrel Radio episode 102, a very weird episode. Thanks for listening to me talk for 2.5 hours, and hope you're not scared off from future prospects. So, goodbye. Oh, and plenty of bottled water and canned food for the apocalypse. You heard it here first. Goodbye.